Hey, this is Brett the Hitman Hart, and I got a very special happy birthday shout-out going out to my longtime fan Jason, a.k.a. Solo Monster. I want to wish you all the best. Have a great birthday. I want to thank you for being such a longtime fan of mine, always in my corner, always cheering me on, always cheering on Mr. The SummerSlam. I want to thank you for always being in my corner. And just know for your birthday, I'm in your corner right now. I'm cheering you on. I want you to have a great birthday. This message is coming courtesy of your good buddy Eddie. We just wanted you to have a great birthday because you're the excellence of execution at everything you do. And you are, without a doubt, the best there is, the best there was, and the best there ever will be. Have a great birthday. And who are you to doubt El Dandy?
It's business time, baby.
You are listening to Solo Monster Sounds Off.
It's such good shit.
Mama Monster.
Conquered! Oh!
You like fighting a woman?
You got grown-ass wrestlers in the back going on Twitter.
Come over here and fight me.
No, speak, bitch. Come on now.
You have legs.
They've made Solo a monster.
I was 99% positive it was just chest up.
No.
I want out of my contract if I don't get what I want.
Today, I get to spend my birthday with an incredibly hot blonde. Aren't I just the luckiest man in the world? Alright, but enough about the person staring back at me in the mirror. Today, I get to spend my birthday with all of you. That's about all I got. For this, episode 882 of the Solo Monster Sounds Off for Sunday, October 6th, 2024. Bad Blood Hangover Edition. A lot happened last night. I'm going to get into the key things you need to know and my thoughts on it all. The AEW media rights deal finally announced at long last. I have not had the chance to comment about it since it was made official. I will do so today. Also got a Dynamite review for the 5-year anniversary show since I didn't get a chance to go live on Wednesday. Plus Wrestle Dream predictions for next weekend. So let's get into this. First and foremost, I want to say thank you to everybody who dropped a dono this week. A lot of happy birthday donations, which was very much appreciated. You could always drop a PayPal if you would like on thesolomonster.com. Hey, the Portland pop star, Paul Hamilton. Holy shit, Paul, thank you, man. Thank you for the love. And Ms. Madness, Michelle Mills as well. Michelle coming in clutch this week. Showing some love. I very much appreciate the support. Scott the Stump Woodford. Good to hear from you, Scott. I hope things are going well. Best in the Game, Trey Porter. Big B, Bryant Becerra. The Diamond Dallas Dance Machine, Harrison Soap. Velvet Revolver, Robert Murray. Iowan Corn Farmer, Jesse Lamphere. The Chicago Slayer, Willie Eichard. The 90s Vampire, Edward Valenzuela. Killshot Keith Hart, and Night Stalker Nayef Alsafar. Thank you all very, very much. And hey, check this out. With WrestlingXCoffee.com, you can gear up and give back. Their mission is to provide wrestling fans with high-quality merchandise while at the same time giving back to the wrestling community. And 10% of their annual profits are donated to charities that best help retired pro wrestlers. All of their shirts are premium quality, none of that cheap crap you get in other places. I'm looking at you, fanatics. If you check out their website and their social media, you'll see photos of some of the wrestlers that are on board with their mission and have worn their clothing, people like Jon Moxley and Taz and Mustafa Ali and Natalya. So browse through their shop. You're going to find a lot of quality t-shirts and hoodies. They're all unisex. You might be wondering why coffee? Where does the coffee come into play? Wrestling X Coffee? They do sell two types of ground coffee beans, but those are only available to ship in the UK. So by all means, if you are based in the UK and you love coffee, you can pick up their Morning Tranquilo or their 1 a.m. pay-per-view varieties. That must be the AEW variety. I love the names. You can pick those up. For the rest of you, grab yourself a shirt or a hoodie or both. And just know that when you do, you are also supporting some great causes for pro wrestlers. And because this is the Sound Off, and this is how we do things here, I have made sure that they set up a special discount code exclusively for Solo Monster listeners. So punch in the promo code SOLOMONSTER10 at checkout for 10% off site-wide. That is Solo Monster and the number 10. visit WrestlingXCoffee.com. Good to see many of you at the House of Glory show last Sunday. We had a packed house for Joe Hendry. I believe in those ticket sales. We had a surprise name answering Mike Santana's open challenge for the HOG world title. I don't want to give anything away because the event did not air live. One of the members of the crew that usually streams our shows on Triller had a medical emergency, could not make the show. But the show should be going up on Triller this week. I believe it's this Wednesday, the 9th, that it is supposed to be going up. So you can check it out then. It's just a situation that could not be avoided, but it will be going up. And then we're going to be back live on October 18th with Nick Nemeth, the TNA World Heavyweight Champion, squaring off for the first time ever against the returning El Hijo del Vikingo. Vikingo's been out for months after having knee surgery earlier this year. He just came back, and HOG is one of his first stops on the comeback tour. Tickets are on sale for that show right now, HOG Salvation. You can go to hogwrestling.net. Also, a quick programming note, NXT and Dynamite are going head-to-head this Tuesday, again, just like they did a year ago. I was only going to cover one show, and it was probably going to be Dynamite, since I was not able to cover Dynamite Live last week. But I didn't realize that Dynamite is airing from 9 to 11. It's not airing from 8 to 10, which means that the two shows are only going to be overlapping for about an hour. So I am very likely going to be watching both shows and then reviewing both of them Tuesday night on YouTube, which means Tuesday Night Titans over on JD's channel is going to be bumped to Wednesday this week. And then next week we'll be back to our regular Tuesday schedule. So just be aware of that. Before I get into Bad Blood, there was a death in the WWE family this week. The first celebrity inductee into the WWE Hall of Fame passed away this week. Pete Rose died on Monday at the age of 83 from heart disease. He is baseball's all-time hit king, well north of 4,000 hits in his career. Won three World Series championships, famously banned from baseball due to betting on games, including Reds games, while he was managing the team, which is prohibited. The rules don't make the distinction of whether or not you are betting for or against your team, but if you are involved, that is a violation of the rules. And a lot of people believe he did bet against his own team while he was managing, even though there was no evidence of it. He's always denied it. People that knew him believe that he did. And you could see where that would be problematic, because in theory, it could influence the moves that you make in the course of a game. It could influence the decisions that you're making during a game if you know you have money on that game. So he agreed to a permanent ban from baseball. And Bart Giamatti, who had only been the commissioner for a few months by that point, he died, I think, like a week later of a heart attack. So how's that for eerie? You don't think this didn't weigh on him? He was only 51 years old. A week after this all goes down, he drops. But Rose applied for reinstatement multiple times over the years with different commissioners. Every single time his request was shot down or ignored. Now, he was also deemed ineligible for induction into the Baseball Hall of Fame. Just based on his stats alone, he would have been a shoo-in. Easy first ballot Hall of Famer. But there's always been this heated debate about whether or not he deserved to be inducted because of the gambling stuff. Ultimately, he never was. But he was inducted into the WWE Hall of Fame in 2004, which is where the so-called celebrity wing started. And it was all just kind of tongue-in-cheek. You know, since baseball wouldn't induct him into its Hall of Fame, WWE decided to induct him into theirs. You know, it was never meant to open the floodgates to other celebrities going in, but that's what ended up happening. This was after he made three straight WrestleMania appearances starting in 1998. And I believe he also guest hosted an episode of Raw during the guest host era. It was very appropriate for him to be working with Kane, given that when he played for the Reds, they were referred to as the Big Red Machine. So in WWE, he worked with the Big Red Machine. And his first two WrestleMania appearances are really the most memorable. You know, he healed on the crowd in Boston at 14, and then he got tombstoned by Kane, which was always weird because Kane was a heel. But he got just a mega babyface reaction for dropping Pete Rose on his head in Boston that night. And then the following year, he tried to get revenge on Kane. He attacked him while he was dressed up as the San Diego Chicken, and he got tombstoned again. So his appearances were always very entertaining, and he got it. You know, he was in on the joke. He understood how to get heat, didn't mind being made to look foolish. Maybe he just needed the payday. I don't know, but his appearances were always very entertaining. The gambling stuff is not the only controversy that dogged him, though. There was a story maybe 6 or 7 years ago where he sued the special counsel that was brought in by MLB to investigate his gambling allegations back in the 80s. This guy, John Dowd. And when the lawyer did an interview a few years ago, and maybe we're going back like 9 or 10 years, he was doing an interview. I don't know if it was a radio interview or a magazine or what it was. But the lawyer claimed that Rose had committed statutory rape. And the case that Rose filed against him, because he filed suit, it got thrown out after they found there was a sworn statement that had alleged that Rose was having sex with a minor back in the 70s, which he later admitted to. You know, the girl was only 14 or 15 years old at that time and said that they had sex in and out of the state of Ohio. And Rose admitted to having sex with her, but he claimed that she was 16 at the time, which is very convenient because 16 is, of course, the age of consent in a lot of states, Ohio being one of those states. And he claimed that they never had sex outside the state. So make of that what you will. You know, he admits to having sex with her. He would have been in his early 30s, I think, at that time. And she would have been, again, 14, 15. He claimed 16. But his response to a reporter about it a couple of years ago was, "It was 55 years ago, babe. Who cares about what happened 50 years ago? You weren't even born. So you shouldn't be talking about it because you weren't born." That's a hell of a response. See, today I learned that you're not allowed to talk about something that happened before you were born. Pete Rose may belong in the Hall of Fame for all of his records, but he certainly won't be inducted for his brain making statements like that. He won't be inducted into the Hall of Fame at all, because if it hasn't happened by now, then it's not ever going to happen. And I think people confuse lifetime ban with permanent ban, because already on social media, I see the comments, "Well, he's dead now. His life is over. That means his lifetime ban is over." No. It wasn't a lifetime ban. It was a permanent ban. So him dying doesn't suddenly mean that he can go in now. He's not going in. And I will say, you know, the Hall of Fame did not adopt the rule barring players on the permanently ineligible list from being inducted into the Hall of Fame. That actually happened a couple of years after Rose got banned. And it was clearly done to keep him out of the Hall of Fame. I mean, the timing of them adopting that rule is not a coincidence. Had Pete Rose known that agreeing to a ban would also block him from ever being inducted into the Hall of Fame, it's possible he would not have agreed to that deal in the first place. But at the end of the day, you know, he still broke the rules. And a lot of players have said this. It's plastered on the wall of every clubhouse in baseball. That any player, any umpire, anyone, you know, coach, manager, anyone connected with the game, if you bet on baseball, and specifically games that you are directly involved in or have a stake in, it is a permanent ban. You know, every clubhouse, you can't pretend that you don't know the rules. It's right there in your face. And I honestly think that if he had just told the truth sooner and seemed genuinely remorseful for what he did, the right people may have had more sympathy for him, and maybe things would have been different. Maybe he would have been reinstated, or maybe he would be in the Hall of Fame right now. You know, he didn't admit to betting on baseball until his book came out in 2004, and that was because he had books to sell. Had he come out sooner and been more contrite, I think people are generally forgiving, you know, for certain things. I think it's very possible he would have been reinstated by now. But, you know, on the question of should he be in the Hall of Fame, you know, it opens up a Pandora's box, because now you also get into whether people like Barry Bonds should be in the Hall of Fame. Should Roger Clemens be in the Hall of Fame, even though they use performance-enhancing drugs? Right? They use drugs, but so did a lot of players. Are we to believe that everybody in the Hall of Fame right now was clean for their entire career? Because I've got a bridge in Brooklyn here I can sell you if you believe that. Some people were just better at not getting caught than others. The one thing that makes me lean towards saying yes on Pete going in is the fact that they passed that Hall of Fame rule only after he agreed to the ban. And I think that Bob Costas actually has the right idea on this. For all of his accomplishments, put him in the Hall of Fame, and at the bottom of his plaque, just put banned from baseball, 1989. I think that would be an appropriate compromise. But chime in, let me know what you think. I'm genuinely curious where people fall on this, because I know it's been a very divisive thing for years, you know, among sports fans. But I feel like more people than not are on the side of he should be it. So if so, why? If not, then why not? Let me know what you think. Last night, WWE held its Bad Blood PLE, 27 years to the day of the first one and the very first Hell in a Cell match between Shawn Michaels and The Undertaker, which featured the debut of Kane and Vince McMahon's last night as a full-time commentator. It was a bloody match. On one side, anyway. I mean, Shawn Michaels was bleeding a gusher. I'll never forget him bleeding. You know, they're on top of the cell, and he's bleeding from the top of the cell through the mesh fencing down onto the camera lens, because the cameraman's in the ring just aiming up, and he gets blood on the lens, and the cameraman just starts cussing. He was like, ah, shit. Or maybe he dropped an F-bomb. I forgot what it was, but he was not happy. But last night, Bad Blood was a two-match show. Now, that's two matches out of five, which is still not great, but two out of five is better than having two good matches on a seven or eight match card. You take out this Hell in a Cell match, though, and this show was fucking terrible. One of the worst all year, in a year of some really great shows. So that Hell in a Cell made all the difference in the world. CM Punk said his goal coming into last night was to bring Hell in a Cell back to what it used to be. To restore it to its former glory. He and Drew McIntyre did just that, and they had an excellent match. Easily Punk's best match since his dog collar match with MJF. And if you go by his WWE career only, this was the best CM Punk match since his SummerSlam match with Brock Lesnar in 2013. It was brutal, it was bloody, it was exactly what the payoff to a feud like this should look like. They didn't have to leave the cell. They kept it inside. There were no crazy bumps or falls off the top. Both men promised coming in to make the other bleed, and they did. Although I thought McIntyre cut himself. Turns out he got busted open hard way by that toolbox shot to the head. That's why there was blood just literally leaking out of his skull. He needed 16 staples to close the wound. I sure hope he didn't tell Punk to hit him in the head with a toolbox as hard as he could to open him up. Because that would be fucking stupid. I would like to think it was an accident, but I have my doubts. See, blood, when used sparingly, blood is a very effective tool in wrestling. You don't want to abuse it. You don't want to overdo it. But in a situation like this, in a match like this, with a stipulation like this, it can be very effective. It could add a lot to the match. But I would much rather someone who knows what they're doing cut themselves on the forehead with a razor blade than tell their opponent to bash them in the head as hard as they can with a fucking metal toolbox. I mean, that really is no better than hitting somebody in the head and not getting your hands up to protect a chair shot. Now, Punk wins, to put an exclamation point at the end of their feud. They opened the show with this when they absolutely could have closed, but as I said coming in, unless they had some big angle plan for the tag team match or a big heel turn or something like that, then Hell in a Cell should have closed the show. As it turned out, they did have something big planned, and it makes total sense why they did not close with this. But this was the best thing on the entire show, and it wasn't even close. The main event, it was good, but it was a distant number two to this. So what's next now for CM Punk? Is it Gunther? At Survivor Series for the World Heavyweight Championship. That was one of the rumors going around a few weeks ago. Last night, Bill Goldberg made a cameo on the show. He was in the crowd. They were in Atlanta, right? His home turf. And Gunther was taunting him, and Goldberg hopped the barricade. Security intervened. They stopped him from getting into the ring. It was as if they were teasing a future match between the two of them. And someone left me a comment about Goldberg possibly costing Gunther the World Heavyweight Championship tomorrow night against Sami Zayn, and then doing Gunther against Goldberg in Saudi Arabia, and then just have Gunther win the belt back after that. Not that they were advocating it, because that's a fucking awful idea, but just putting it out there is something that, you know, do you think that this is possible? I can't say it's not possible, but I sure as hell hope that doesn't happen. And I don't see how Sami Zayn needing an assist from Goldberg is going to help Sami Zayn in any way, especially if he just turns around in a month and loses it back to Gunther. I just don't see what the point of that would be. I'm hoping last night was just a segment to pop the crowd in Atlanta and nothing more. For Drew McIntyre, what do I think is next for him? I don't know what's next for him, but I think he should either request a trade to SmackDown or go nuts and want to go after Punk again, to the point where Adam Pearce says, you know what? Raw is not big enough for the both of you. And he works out a deal with Nick Aldis to trade McIntyre to SmackDown in exchange for a player to be named later. And that player turns out to be AJ Styles. Because I think that would be not a totally even trade. I mean, AJ has not had the kind of year that McIntyre has had. But AJ is still a former WWE champion. He's still looked at as a top name in the company. The fans, I think, still look at him that way. They like him. So I think it would be an even enough trade that it wouldn't feel lopsided if you did one for one like that. That's what I would do. After Hell in a Cell last night, everything in the middle of that show was very underwhelming. Nia Jax retained her title over Bayley with a distraction assist from Tiffany Stratton, who once again teased a potential cash-in but did not actually follow through. Tiffany has not won a match, a singles match, since March. Think about that, right? Because we know Tiffany is going to be, you know, a women's champion and a headline attraction in that division for years to come. She has not won a match one-on-one since March. And she's mostly been a loser since winning the Money in the Bank briefcase. They do this with everybody. The sooner they have her cash in and win that title, the better. The match itself, I didn't think the match itself was anything special. Damian Priest pinned Finn Balor. Good old Pin Balor. For a match with such history behind it between these two, I expected more. You know, it was fine, but that's all it was. It was just fine. And Priest overcomes interference from the Judgment Day. He wins anyway, so I don't know where you even go with this now, given that Priest won. He basically won a handicap match. That would seem to be it. Liv Morgan is still the women's world champion. She found a way to beat Rhea Ripley, even with Dominic Mysterio hanging over the aisle in a shark cage. This was not nearly as good as their SummerSlam match, or with as much heat as that match had, not even close. It felt very flat, and the finish was even flatter. You had Raquel Rodriguez return. She attacked Rhea for the disqualification. Liv didn't have Dominic, so she called up the reinforcement. She called up an old friend to be her muscle. Makes sense, given the history that Raquel has with Rhea and with Liv. The problem is, she's been gone almost the entire year, and even when she was there, she wasn't over. So you take somebody who wasn't over to begin with, and you throw them out there after so long, and I guarantee you, more than half the people in that arena last night, they said 16,000 people, more than half the people in that building didn't even know who she was when she showed up. Guarantee it. And the ones that did just didn't give a shit. And they groaned at the lame DQ finish. But what it does is it extends things a little bit longer before Rhea eventually gets the belt back. Let her win the belt back when we get a little bit closer to the end of the year. You know, let her work with Raquel first before she gets one last match with Liv. I don't think there's enough juice left in this feud to hold off on that, you know, title change until WrestleMania. I really don't. But Saturday night's main event, or that first Raw on Netflix to the beginning of January, that would be the best time, I think, to do the title change. Put the belt on Rhea. Rhea then transitions into whatever it is that she's going to be doing at WrestleMania. In the meantime, you could do Team Liv against Team Rhea at Survivor Series in the Women's War Games match, because what the hell else are they going to do for Women's War Games this year? Team Rhea and Team Liv is really the only thing that makes sense to me. Roman Reigns and Cody Rhodes, they beat the Bloodline. Solo Sikoa and Jacob Fatu. This was Roman's first match since WrestleMania. It was carried by the star power in this match. The draw here was Cody and Roman tagging for the first time. That was the real draw. The match itself was good, but this was really about two things. Two returns. One during the match, one after the match. First, we had the return of Jimmy Uso, who showed up to fight off Tama Tonga and Tonga Loa, which led to Solo being speared and pinned by Roman Reigns. And then the return afterwards of the final boss, The Rock, made a surprise appearance at the very end of the show, coming out on stage in his vest. He had his Brahma Bull belt draped over his shoulder, the Brahma Bull belt that he says was gifted to him by Muhammad Ali's widow at the Hall of Fame. Technically, yes. After WWE made the belt to give to her for her to give to him. Makes it sound like she came up with the idea herself. Maybe she handcrafted the belt with her own bare hands. So he threw his fingers up to show, you know, one, two, three, and then he made a throat slash gesture before he walked out. And he left Roman and Jimmy and Cody in the ring together to wonder what he was referring to. Leave it to Dwayne to once again take Punk's main event spot away from him. The more things change, the more they stay the same. Time is a flat circle. You know, there were a lot of people who got very angry when I made that comment on Twitter last night. I think they took it very seriously. And they were like, well, you know, you realize that Dwayne is the bigger star than Punk is. Really? I didn't know. I had no idea. And here I thought CM Punk was the worldwide movie star. I stand corrected. Edgar 5799482 with an egg for a profile image. I stand corrected. I can admit when I'm wrong. But The Rock came out. He got a monstrous reaction. And there were rumors about him possibly being there. Pat McAfee sort of let it slip the other day. I know he was in Atlanta. There were pictures of him at some basketball game or football game, whatever it was. Most people in the building, I don't think, were expecting Rock to come out. So they blew their stack as soon as they hit his music. The Rock being back, really, if you think about it, is the unofficial kickoff to WrestleMania season. You know? Now, what did the throat slash mean? Was it a signal to Roman and Jimmy that because they helped Cody, they're in his crosshairs now? They've disgraced the family. Or was it a sign not to Roman, but to Cody, that he pinned him at WrestleMania 1-2-3, and he's coming for that title just like he promised he would? Or was it, as some people said in the comments last night, a reference to a possible triple threat match with Cody, Roman, and The Rock for WrestleMania in Las Vegas next year? I think if you do that, you do a triple threat match with those three, I really think it takes something away from a future singles match between Rock and Roman. If the first time they're on opposing sides is going to be in a triple threat with Cody Rhodes thrown in there. It's just how I feel. I'm not saying that Rock and Roman won't still be big box office. But I think you take some of the edge off if you give it away first in a three-way instead of just doing it one-on-one. Now, we don't know who that message was intended for. That's the cliffhanger. The Rock never said a word. They want you to tune into SmackDown this week to find out if he's even on the show. I'm surprised we got him back now. I really am. I didn't think we would see him back on TV until Raw moved to Netflix. How Rock might play into Survivor Series this year and a War Games match involving the Bloodline also is a question that has to be asked. You know, Jimmy is finally back, and he's aligned with Roman. Jay is on Raw. He's the Intercontinental Champion. He's doing his own thing, and he has had nothing to do with any of this Bloodline stuff. Sam emailed me. I want to give a shout-out to Sam in Lancashire, UK. And he suggested one easy way to get Jey Uso involved with the Bloodline again before Survivor Series. And it would be to have Sammy and Jey, and they had teased this a couple of months ago, and then they dropped it cold. Because clearly the creative changed, and they decided to go a different way with it. But if they wanted to, Sami Zayn and Jey Uso were talking about going after the tag team titles on Raw. You can have them link up again. Once this stuff with Sammy and Gunther plays out, because he's gonna lose tomorrow night. And that probably won't be the end of the issue between Sammy and Gunther, but let's say after that, Sammy and Jay decide, you know what? I'm gonna go after the Judgment Day. We're gonna go after those Raw tag team titles before Crown Jewel. and they win them. And then at Crown Jewel, they wrestle the Bloodline, who are the SmackDown Tag Team Champions right now. And this ties into the Crown Jewel stuff I'm going to talk about in a second, because they're doing champion against champion with the men and the women on that show. They did not say anything about the tag team titles, though. So I don't think that they're doing that, you know, on the tag team side. But if they did, you do champions against champions. I mean, hell, if it were me, I would make it a unification match and just go all the way with it so we get one set of tag team champions. But however the match goes, if they do that, coming out of it, you can easily get Jay and maybe even Sami Zayn involved with the Bloodline story, and you can get them involved in a War Games match. So it's not a bad idea. I don't get the sense that the whole champion against champion brand warfare thing, I don't think they're doing it with the tag teams, but they didn't say they're not. So you can't discount it as a possibility. On Instagram after The Rock, he was live streaming on IG as he was walking out of the building. He said there's been a lot of bullshit going on the last 6 months. He didn't elaborate on what that bullshit is. So we'll have to wait for TV and find out why he's back. Why is he back now? That's the question. Why is he back now? Something else I pointed out last night. Solo Sikoa takes yet another loss. For a guy who said that wins and losses have consequences, which is the whole reason why he took over from Roman as the tribal chief, you would think that all of this losing would lead to some consequences for him. He lost at SummerSlam, he lost the rematch to Cody in the steel cage, and he took the loss to Roman last night. They've done a far better job of protecting Jacob Fatu than they have protecting Solo Sikoa, the supposed leader of this bloodline. Makes you wonder, why? Why is that? Are they setting up for Jacob to take over as the leader? Be funny, you know, he goes around every week yelling, "I love you, Solo!" Right, he did it last night like 1,000 times. "I love you, Solo." Maybe one day they'll just be in the ring and he'll just randomly say, "I hate you, Solo." And Solo's eyes get all wide and then Jacob just kicks him in the fucking face. But that wasn't the only big angle that they shot last night. After the show was over, during the press conference, the press conference was taking place on the inside, and I did not get a chance to see the press conference yet. But as that was going on the inside, Kevin Owens, who did not have a match on this show, he confronted Cody Rhodes outside Cody's bus in the parking lot, and fans were filming the entire thing. I was just getting word about this before I went live. I'm literally about to go live, and I didn't believe it at first. I thought people were just trolling when they said that Kevin Owens just attacked Cody Rhodes and turned heel, but that's exactly what happened. He kicked the living shit out of the WWE champion and left him laying. And then he took off in his Lamborghini. That may be the biggest takeaway from all of this, that Kevin Owens drives around in a $200,000 sports car when he's on the road. The fucking door lifts up. It's like he's climbing into a DeLorean. And off he goes. My first thought was, why are they shooting this off camera when they have been teasing this heel turn on TV now for the last couple of months? Why do it on social media? Why do it the same night that The Rock comes back? Because The Rock is just going to overshadow everything. I mean, he just sucks the oxygen up in the room, and you can't breathe. Having now gone back and watched the entire clip, I think it was pretty cool the way that they did it, you know, with the fans all around filming and reacting to it the way they did and losing their minds, not knowing what it was that the two of them were arguing about before KO attacked him. It made it feel real. It made it feel genuine, you know, in a way that a lot of segments on TV sometimes don't. So it was different. Different can be good sometimes. So I thought it was well done. I still question why you would do it the same night that The Rock came back and not save it for Friday. But I've been saying for weeks now, they desperately need heels on SmackDown. So the Owens turn was the most predictable of the turns they could do. But I think it was necessary. And it's another hook now for the show. Why did Owens do what he did, right? Why now? Why in the parking lot? Why was he so upset at Cody that he had to drive up to Cody and kick his ass? What did Cody do? Did Cody text him a dirty joke about his wife? Like, what did Cody do? And how is Randy Orton going to react to all this? Is he next? Is he the next one to drop Cody on his ass? But with The Rock coming back and teasing the match with Cody, I'm not sure where that leaves a possible Cody Rhodes-Randy Orton feud now. I just can't see Cody losing the title now before WrestleMania. So we have more questions than answers coming out of last night. I don't think that's a bad thing. Let's be honest here. SmackDown could use the boost. This show has been terribly dull for a while now. Like, this has been a problem with SmackDown now for at least 3 months. You can have one really good SmackDown, but there have been a lot of very dull, average, boring fucking episodes of SmackDown this summer. Rock coming back and Owens going heel is just what that show needs to give it a kick in the ass and make it interesting again. Now, there was one more thing from last night. Triple H had what they billed as a historic announcement. I saw a belt under a tarp in the ring and, you know, behind him, and I thought maybe they were going to introduce a women's mid-card title. Because there's been a lot of talk about a women's mid-card title possibly being introduced, and all this talk about a historic announcement and the start of a new era. That's what I was thinking initially. What it was a new Crown Jewel Championship, which is gimmick infringement of the highest order if I've ever seen it. Okay, Zilla Fatu is our Crown Jewel Champion in House of Glory. Our Crown Jewel title dates back to 2015, I'll have you know. And not for nothing, if you look at two pictures of these titles side by side, I think our Crown Jewel title looks a lot nicer than their Crown Jewel title. Their Crown Jewel title, though, has 50 carats in diamonds. Gee, I wonder who paid for that. But I can't believe it. I mean, we're going to have to consult with Stephen P. New on this and get that cease and desist out to Nick Khan. There will be a Crown Jewel title for the men. There will be a Crown Jewel title for the women. And this will be a new annual tradition at Crown Jewel where the WWE champion wrestles the World Heavyweight Champion and the Women's World Champion wrestles the WWE Women's Champion. None of their titles are going to be on the line, but the winners will receive the Crown Jewel belt. So it's a trophy belt. It's like the green belt that Braun Strowman won at the Greatest Royal Rumble, or that solid gold trophy, whatever name they gave it. Remember that gold trophy that The Undertaker won at Super Showdown a few years ago? I think it was like in the aisleway, and he just walked right past it. Like, he didn't even take it with him. He's like, yeah, I'm not taking this back to the States with me. AEW, they've got the Owen Hart Foundation belts every year, but at least now, like, the winners of the Owen, they get world championship matches at All In. King and Queen of the Ring, same thing. At least now the winners get world championship matches at SummerSlam. So there are real stakes involved. This is just for bragging rights. It's what they used to do with brand warfare at Survivor Series, only now with belts. They don't do Raw versus SmackDown anymore at Survivor Series, thank God. If they want to do it as a gimmick for one of their Saudi shows, my attitude is whatever. It's fine. It's not ideal to beat one of your world champions and make them feel less than. But I'm honestly just kind of indifferent to the whole thing. If they want to use it as a gimmick and they think it's going to be a draw for Crown Jewel once a year, then be my guest. As things stand, the matches would be Cody Rhodes against Gunther and Liv Morgan against Nia Jax. Heel against heel, which doesn't sound very appealing to me.
Hey, it's Chris Van Vliet, and since you like listening to wrestling podcasts, after this episode's done, let's keep the fun going with my podcast, Insight with Chris Van Vliet. All of the interviews that you might have seen snippets of on social media or YouTube, they're all available for your listening pleasure in audio form. We've got two new guests every week, Tuesdays and Thursdays, and then on Fridays, we do the Ask CVV episodes where I answer your burning questions. Some recent guests include Dave Bautista, The Undertaker, Drew McIntyre, Otis, Damian Priest, Ken Shamrock, Cody Rhodes, and a whole lot more. Go search for Insight with Chris Van Vliet on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you're listening to this right now.
NXT's debut episode on the CW network took place on Tuesday night. I got a full review on the YouTube channel. I went live after the show on Tuesday. You could also check out the audio of the review. It is up on the feed right now. We have a new NXT champion. His name is Trick Williams. He unseated Ethan Page with CM Punk as the special guest referee. Roxanne Perez, though, still the NXT Women's Champion after her match with Julia. This was Julia's first big match, and I think only her second match since coming to NXT. This is not the Julia that we saw on Tuesday is not the Julia that you probably saw if you saw any of her matches in Stardom or Marigold. This was Julia maybe 50%. Julia can do a hell of a lot better than this. And they still had a good match, but they didn't go out there and have anything, you know, blow away for her first appearance or anything like that. We also had the return of Cora Jade, who cost Julia the match. And now it looks like Cora Jade and Roxanne, former friends, they're kind of forming an alliance. And maybe Julia is going to get some help from Stephanie Vaquer, who we know is also coming into NXT. They aired a teaser promo for Delta, who is out of Riot City Wrestling in Australia, the same place where Rhea Ripley got her start. There's been a lot of hype around Delta. I haven't seen too much of her work. I saw a couple of her matches on YouTube, but not enough to get a real feel for, I think, like the best of what she can do. But there's a lot of hype around her as well. She was part of the tryouts they did in Perth when they were there for Elimination Chamber back in February, and they signed her not long after that, but she had to keep it a secret this entire time. So we got our first vignette for her. They never mentioned Delta, but clearly it was for her. You could just tell from behind. It was like a woman. I think it was like a city in ruins, and she was kind of walking down the road. You saw the road signs above her head. And I think the date on there was Halloween Havoc. I think people were kind of putting two and two together about some of the numbers that were in the signs. So that sounds like it's going to be the place where she makes her debut. For all the chatter over the last couple of months about the Motor City Machine Guns, they were nowhere to be found on Tuesday, and it doesn't look like they're going to be there this Tuesday either. It looks like they're heading straight to the main roster, because we got a vignette on SmackDown Friday night. It was like something out of a Need for Speed game, but it looks like it was for the Motor City Machine Guns, even though their name was never mentioned. There was a fist that was briefly shown in the video. That's the Joe Louis Monument fist, which is in Detroit, which is, of course, the Motor City. So Shelley and Saban are going to SmackDown. I think that's great. I didn't even mind them going to NXT first and starting out there for a while, but it's not like they need to be there. So clearly there is a need for more teams on the main roster, Raw and SmackDown. If the Lucha Bros had gotten their releases early and Tony Khan let their contracts expire without adding time to it, which apparently is what he's done, they were likely on their way to the main roster, too. You could have been adding the Lucha Bros and the Motor City Machine Guns. You could have put one team on Raw, the other team on SmackDown, and those two teams would have given those divisions a huge boost. The Lucha Bros, it's going to be a while before they make their way over, but the Machine Guns, they're definitely going to add a lot to the division, and adding them is not going to change everything. They still need more teams, and it's, of course, how they're booked is always the most important thing. But I'm happy for them. You know, they're pretty late in their career to be getting this first big break in WWE, but better late than never. And anybody, and I've said this, if anybody has seen their work in the last year, 2 years, one thing you cannot say about the Motor City Machine Guns is that they're washed, is that they're not the same. They're a shell of their former selves. They used to be great. Now they're only good. No, they're still fucking great. I've seen them up close. I've seen Alex Shelley, you know, in the singles run he got, former Impact World Champion, even just doing single stuff. Like, these guys can go, and the Machine Guns are one of the more prolific tag teams in wrestling in the last 20 years. They've bounced around a few different places. This is going to be their first go-around on the main roster in WWE, and I think it's great. As far as this NXT show, some of the matches were good. The street fight with Wesley and Zach Wentz was the best of all the matches. On the whole, I wasn't overly impressed by what I saw. I didn't think it was a bad show. I just, you know, some people were going gaga over it. I didn't see what the big deal was. Maybe they had an off night. Maybe it wasn't the best night of NXT, and it'll be different this week. I don't know. I'll be watching this Tuesday. They're going to be in St. Louis, a much smaller venue, so a much smaller crowd. Maybe they'll be louder, even though it's smaller. Randy Orton is going to be there wrestling Javon Evans, who is one of the young upstarts in NXT, who's been getting a lot of attention this year. And Tony D'Angelo is going to be challenging Oba Femi for the North American Championship. Oba Femi is the real deal. Oba Femi is going to be huge when he gets called up to that main roster. I'm already looking at potential opponents for him, and you got people like Sheamus and McIntyre and Gunther. I can't wait for that. The premiere on CW averaged 895,000 viewers, which is up 44% from the final episode on USA Network. It is the best audience for NXT in a year. Since last October, when they loaded that show up with all the big names from the main roster. Remember, they had John Cena and they had The Undertaker was there. And LA Knight was there. A bunch of people were there. And they went head-to-head with Dynamite. Same thing for the demo. Best demo number in a year. They peaked with 965,000 viewers for the Julia Roxanne Perez match that opened the show. And they actually beat Fox for the first hour of the show, which is something that never happens. And then the second hour went up against the vice presidential debate, which ended up doing over 40 million viewers across multiple networks. So I would say they held up pretty well. What that looks like this week, what that looks like in week three and week four, that will give us a better sense of what the show is going to do on average week to week, but it's easily going to be the highest rated show on the CW. Mike Johnson on PW Insider said that CW officials were thrilled about the number because normally in that slot, they do anywhere between 300,000 and 400,000 viewers with reruns of The Conners. So I would say that, I would be thrilled too if I were them. And Elimination Chamber in 2025 looks to be coming to the UK. It looks like their recent run of international PLEs are going to continue into March with the event coming to England. This was first reported by WrestleVotes, and Brian Alvarez chimed in and confirmed it also later on that the show will be taking place in March with Birmingham and Manchester as the front runners. The venues were not reported, but are likely either the Utilita Arena Birmingham or the AO Arena are the buildings that are being talked about. Once confirmed, which it is not yet confirmed, but once confirmed, it will be the fourth straight Elimination Chamber event to take place on international soil. The first one took place in February of 2022 in Saudi Arabia, followed by Montreal in 2023. And of course, they were in Perth, Australia in February of this year. And so with the show taking place in March, I think that would be the first March Elimination Chamber. I could be wrong, but I think that would be the first one. And that would leave the Royal Rumble as the lone February PLE, because the Rumble for the first time is taking place on the first of the month in February next year. This week's episode is sponsored by ExpressVPN. You're out at the club, the drinks are flowing, you see a cute girl at the bar, you start up a conversation. One thing leads to another. You end up back at her place and yada, yada, yada. You wake up and you realize that you forgot to wrap it up. Congrats. Now you know what it feels like to go online with that ExpressVPN. You might be fine, but you don't even know this girl's name. And there's all kinds of nasty consequences that you may have to pay for going without protection. Not the least of which is a little miniature version of yourself that poops and pees and cries all day. Is that what you want? I don't think so. Every time you connect to an unencrypted network, in a restaurant, a hotel, an airport, it could be anywhere, your online data is not secure. Any hacker on the same network can easily access and steal your bank login, your credit card details, and other sensitive information. Doesn't take much technical knowledge either. A 12-year-old could do it. Those same hackers can make up to $1,000 per person selling your data on the dark web. ExpressVPN stops hackers from stealing your data by creating a secure tunnel between your device and the internet. Now, what makes ExpressVPN the best VPN is how easy it is to use. Just fire up the app, you click one button to get protected, and that's it. It also works on all of your devices, including phones, laptops, tablets, and smart TVs. There's a reason why ExpressVPN is rated number one by top tech reviewers like CNET and The Verge. Whenever I travel, like when I flew to Tampa in January and Chicago last month, I made sure that I had my ExpressVPN app on my phone and my laptop because it gave me that peace of mind knowing that I was protected. It's important that I know my information is safe and secure, and ExpressVPN makes it so that I don't have to spend my time stressing out about it. You just set it and forget about it. I have plenty of other things to worry about without this being one of them. Secure your online data today by visiting expressvpn.com/solomonster. That's expressvpn.com/Solomonster, and you can get an extra 3 months free. That's expressvpn.com/Solomonster. 5 years ago, pro wrestling returned to TNT for the first time since the death of WCW in 2001. And those early days of Dynamite were really something special. The show just had a different vibe, had a different energy to it. Even the arenas were lighted differently because they had a lot more people in the buildings. People were starved, though. They were starved for an alternative to the shit that was being shoved down their throat by Vince McMahon. Raw and SmackDown were largely atrocious television shows back then, especially Raw. So the stars were aligned at that, at just the perfect time for somebody else to come along and bring a little excitement back into pro wrestling. And that's what AEW did. And then a few months later, the pandemic shut everything down, and they were forced to run their shows out of an empty building, so the timing was not ideal, right? The show wasn't even 6 months old at that point. But something very important happened in January of that year, before we even knew what COVID was. AEW signed a multi-year agreement with Warner Brothers Discovery to actually get paid for its programming, which was a big deal for what really was a startup company at the time. And it was 2 months later when everything got shut down. And who knows if they get that deal had they waited, right? I mean, as it turned out, pro wrestling was some of the only live programming that even aired weekly on television that year, right? USA and TNT would have been in real trouble if they did not have Raw and Dynamite. Here we are 5 years later, and the AEW product, it does not have the same spark anymore. The ratings are nothing close to what they used to be. Viewership overall is down year over year. Some weeks they can barely sell 2,500 tickets to a show, right? I mean, you just look and more than half the building is empty. The booking is all over the place. I mean, this is a company that has a lot of holes, has a lot of problems. One problem that they do not have is worrying about where their income is going to be coming from or if they are going to have a home to air its television shows. Because on Wednesday, after months and months and months of speculation, AEW and Warner Brothers Discovery finally consummated the marriage, or maybe it would be more accurate to say that they renewed their vows, and announced a multi-year media rights renewal for Dynamite and Collision to remain on TBS and TNT with a streaming component on Max, which was just a must. I mean, this deal would have been very underwhelming without it. The press release states that WBD's networks and platforms will remain the exclusive home of AEW Dynamite, Wednesdays on TBS, and AEW Collision, Saturdays on TNT, with enhanced distribution rights across social platforms, as well as building opportunities for additional AEW programming for linear and digital platforms in the future. Additionally, for the first time, all AEW Dynamite and Collision programming starting January 2025 will stream live exclusively on Max for U.S. subscribers only. So that means the shows will be simulcast live on Max at the same time they air on TV, which is going to make for what I'm sure is going to be some very civil discourse about the ratings going forward. If Dynamite starts pulling 500,000 viewers every week on TBS, we'll have no way of knowing how many more people may be watching on Max, but that's not going to stop people from claiming the show is dying, and other people from claiming that the show could be doing 2 million more people, for all we know, on streaming, which it won't. But it's nothing but good for AEW that they're going to have the show airing in two different places. You know, in theory, it will get more eyeballs on Dynamite and Collision. All AEW programming airing on WBD's networks will also be available to stream on demand on Max. AEW and WBD will also collaborate to distribute AEW pay-per-view events live on Max at a discounted price per event, with all marketing and promotions of those pay-per-views exclusively centered on Max. AEW pay-per-view distribution on Max will begin later in 2025, with additional information and pricing to be shared in the coming months. Variety first reported that the deal is valued at, quote, upwards of $150 million per year when all elements are taken into account. The Sports Business Journal said, according to sources, it is a 3-year deal with an option for a fourth. So very much like the previous deal they signed where Warner exercised that fourth year, which is why when everybody thought we would hear about negotiations last year for a new deal, we heard nothing because they exercised the option. They, being the Sports Business Journal, estimated the deal at $170 million annually, with WBD retaining its equity stake in the company, although the size of that stake was not disclosed. Now, we have heard talk about Warner owning a piece of the company before. Tony Khan has always danced around the question whenever he was asked about it, and he's always been very vague, which almost certainly means that it's true, because if it wasn't, he could have just said, that's not true. And he's never done that. He's never denied it. But that equity stake could be anything. I mean, it could be 5%. It could be 25%. We don't know. Enter Dave Meltzer, who says the deal actually totals $555 million for 3 years, with the deal being broken down as $180 million in 2025, $185 million in 2026, and $190 million in 2027. With an option year in 2028 for what he says is a significantly higher number should they choose to exercise it. Now, Variety later updated its initial report of $150 million a year to $185 million a year. Quote, when all elements are taken into account, unquote. So did Dave Meltzer just fact check Variety? By God, I think he did. And good on Variety for correcting themselves. Dynamite is believed to be staying on Wednesdays. Collision is going to stay on Saturdays. Rampage, you didn't hear me mention Rampage. Rampage may be discontinued altogether. We can only hope. Now, that is not fully confirmed. It is possible that Rampage could end up on another platform, but honestly, what is the point? What is the point? Rampage has been The Walking Dead now for years. You think back to those early days in the summer of 2021, and you had the debut of CM Punk, right? The first dance in Chicago. You had that great match where Christian Cage pinned Kenny Omega to win the Impact World title. I don't even know this version of Rampage that airs on TV now. It is completely unrecognizable from what it was at the beginning. And that's not a recent phenomenon. It's been that way now for a long time. So it is best to drive the stake through the brain and be done with it. But remember the rumors about a possible Fox show, maybe on FS1, right? That's been talked about now for a few weeks. Swerve Strickland did an interview recently. He flat out said they were getting a deal with Fox. He spilled the beans. That would be the Shockwave show that we've heard about. SEScoops.com is reporting that the WBD deal is exclusive for cable TV only. And cable TV and streaming. But as far as television, it's exclusive for cable. Which, if that's true, the only other possible place for AEW to air would be a broadcast network like Fox. Now, Fox does own Tubi, so could there be a streaming thing on Tubi? The answer is no. If they have exclusivity in streaming on Max, then they would not be able to stream on Tubi. So, all that to say, the only possible destination, if this is true, for another AEW show would be Fox, you know, or another broadcast network like the CW, which has NXT now, and there's no chance they end up on the CW. But that would mean if they make that deal with Fox that, I mean, think about that. That would be something, wouldn't it? For Fox to give SmackDown the boot and replace it with an AEW show? Meltzer claims any Fox show would likely air on Tuesdays or Thursdays. I'm very curious to find out what kind of deal they make with Fox and for what kind of money, because the Murdochs were very clear. They felt they were not getting the return on investment that they had expected with SmackDown, mainly from the ad side, because the numbers, if you look at the ratings, like numbers-wise on most weeks, they did great numbers on Fox, and they were usually number one for the night, but it's all about ad sales. That's why they dumped them. But they also paid $1 billion for SmackDown. They're not going to spend $1 billion on AEW. So for them, if they're paying, let's say, relatively little, then they really have nothing to lose. And from Tony Khan's perspective, you get more eyeballs on the product and you get more money for the extra content. So unless the show was a time buy for Tony where he paid to get on Fox, any additional money he can get out of them is a good thing for him. Now, I do think adding another show, just, and I'm speaking as a viewer now, I think adding another show, and I am but one viewer, it would be overkill. Now, it may not be overkill if you only watch AEW. So if you're part of the AEW army, you bleed AEW, you'd be willing to take a bullet for Tony Khan, then it may not be overkill for you. But if you watch a lot of wrestling, if you watch WWE and AEW, you know, you're watching 3 hours, right? Actually 2 hours starting tomorrow night of Raw, 2 hours of SmackDown, soon to be three, possibly starting in January, 2 hours of NXT, 2 hours of Dynamite, 2 hours of Collision, and then you throw in at least 1 hour of Shockwave. Like, it's too much. It's too much. There is such a thing as too much of a good thing. That's just way too much television to ask people to commit to on a weekly basis. I mean, they can pick and choose, but again, you got storylines that are blending in from one show to the other. It's a lot. It's a big commitment to ask of people. And you do risk burning out your audience. Evidently, Tony feels that that is a risk worth taking if they can get enough money out of it. And he doesn't give a shit if people watch WWE, right? As long as people watch AEW. And if that's all you consume, then for you, if they end up getting rid of Rampage, then you're really just looking at Dynamite, Collision, and Shockwave, which is not so bad. But it's going to be very difficult to make Shockwave a must-see show and keep it that way. I mean, that's what Rampage was at first. That's what Collision was supposed to be. And you see how quickly they dropped off. Shockwave is going to end up the same way. Because there's only so much wrestling one person can consume in a given week and not get tired of it. And because Dynamite is always going to be Tony Khan's baby. Dynamite is always going to be their main priority, especially for the money that Warner Brothers Discovery is paying them for it. Now, there was also no mention of Ring of Honor in any of this, which tells you, I think, everything you need to know about the state of Ring of Honor. Getting the AEW library on Max is a huge thing, though. Something that fans have wanted for a long time. Not only to have access to all the old shows, but to have them organized in one centralized place. It's not going to happen overnight. It may take a good chunk of the year to migrate everything over. I mean, they don't have the extensive library that WWE does. I mean, it took forever for them to get everything digitized and scrubbed for music licensing and all that when the WWE network first launched. But even with only 5 years worth of content, I mean, these things take time. It's not going to happen overnight. Interestingly, according to Meltzer, with this new deal, AEW will no longer be sharing in the advertising revenue with Warner Brothers Discovery, which it's been doing for the past 5 years. But you would think the increase in rights fees, that should more than make up for that. Pay-per-views on Max, that's also huge, although that's not going to start until later in 2025 because they just don't have the technology to do it right now. They're still testing all of that out. The pay-per-views will be discounted from their usual $50 price tag, but to order them, you do first have to have a Max subscription, which is either $9.99 a month with ads or $16.99 a month without ads. So it's not quite like UFC where you have to pay for ESPN Plus, I think it is, and then there's an additional 60 or 70 or 80 bucks, whatever ridiculous price UFC charges these days on top of that subscription fee. So it's not exactly like that, but it's not like WWE and Peacock either, where you just pay for Peacock and then the PLEs are essentially free. This sounds like it'll be closer to the UFC model, but the pay-per-views will not cost as much as the UFC shows do. They say it's going to be a reduced price, but they didn't specify what that means. Ideally, it would be something like $20 and not $40. $40 would not be much of a discount. Now, would it? But since Warner is going to be getting a cut of the pay-per-view buys on Max, I'm not sure they're going to be discounted by all that much. Triller TV carries the AEW pay-per-views now. I know they started offering a bundle where you can pay one price for a select number of shows. I think it's three. If Triller continues to carry the events even after they debut on Max and they offer bundles and Max doesn't, why would anyone watch the shows on Max? You know, I don't know. Depends how big that discount is. But for now, nothing is changing because, again, Max does not have the infrastructure in place to support live pay-per-views yet. But I take a step back and I look at the big picture here. Now that we finally have this deal announced, And the deal on the whole looks to be a big win for Tony Khan. The most important thing for him was getting a big rights increase in a multi-year commitment because it guarantees that they're going to have a home for at least the next 3 years. And they're going to have enough money coming in that they should become profitable by next year. That was his number one priority. And he got that. And it means that they can continue to be competitive with WWE when it comes to signing free agents, right? Even if you believe that they signed too many free agents and they should scale back and they should focus more on developing compelling stories for the talent that they do have, which is something I happen to agree with, even still, you want to have the ability to sign a big name if they become available, if you think they can help bring eyeballs to your product. Just because Tony Khan comes from a billionaire family doesn't mean that there aren't limits to how much money he is willing to spend. And without a deal like this, there will come a point where they just would not be able to do it. There's always going to be that day of reckoning that comes. And they would have to start making significant cuts, which means a lot of people end up losing their jobs. So they got that. And the money that they're going to make just in the first year of this new deal alone is more than the total of their last deal. You know, when I did my prediction show last year, I said I thought that they would re-sign with Warner for 3 years at double their current deal. They signed for 3 years at a little more than that, so I wasn't far off. And I said it then, you know, if they can do that, then that would be a win for them. And this is a win for them. Would it have been better if the deal was longer? Sure. 3 years is not really that long of a time. You know, these WWE deals you look at, usually they're for 5 years. 5 years would have been nicer. It would have made them more secure. They do have the option for that fourth year, but you know what? Who knows what shape the company is going to be in come 2027. If they continue to lose viewers, it is entirely possible that Warner Brothers Discovery says, thanks, but no thanks. I think we're good. And Warner Brothers Discovery has their own issues. I mean, they're still $40 billion in debt. They've already, they've let go of a lot of employees over the past year, year and a half. I mean, they're not exactly in the best shape either. So, I mean, we could sit here and say, oh boy, you know, I wonder what condition AEW is going to be in 3 years from now. We should be asking the same question about Warner Brothers Discovery. But Tony Khan has 3 years to make sure that the worst doesn't happen and the bottom doesn't fall out. This deal does not magically make all of their problems go away, though. They are losing viewers. They just had their 5-year anniversary episode of Dynamite this week. Tony loaded it up with two huge matches that could have been saved for a bigger show. He just threw them out there on TV. Will Ospreay against Ricochet and Bryan Danielson against Kazuchika Okada, part three. The numbers actually went down this week to 680,000 viewers. Now, what impact did the overrun have? I don't know, because they had a long overrun. They went over by like half an hour. So it's possible the number would have been higher than 680. But either way, I mean, you would have expected the numbers to be a lot higher than that. That's the lowest audience total for the show in a month. In the key demo, they dropped 13% from the week before. The fifth lowest number all year. You compare that to what they did this same week a year ago. Their overall viewership was down 15%. The demo was down 29%. That's almost 30% down for a show built around two huge matches. And for what? I say built around, but that's not really true because the Danielson match only came about 2 days before on social media. The Ospreay-Ricochet match, I mean, the entire reason that Ricochet was even brought into the company was to wrestle Will Ospreay. And now it's already been done, a month into his run. Great matches have never been the problem with AEW. AEW farts great matches out of its ass every single week. So why aren't they doing better than they are? That's the question that people should be asking. Not, oh, why are some of these podcasters being so mean to Tony Khan? And why do they hate AEW? You know, it's a very low IQ way of hitting back at valid criticism. That criticism and those problems, they don't go away now that the TV deal has been announced. But this is still great news for AEW, and anybody saying differently is being disingenuous. Outside of WWE, no pro wrestling company has ever gotten a rights deal of this size, and they did it in 5 years. And that's a very impressive achievement. And to tack on to all of this, The Dipshit of the Week award goes to Eric Bischoff. Eric Bischoff has a bunch of different shows, right? He's got 83 weeks. He's got a show called Wise Choices. He didn't make a very wise choice doubling down on this. Bischoff is consumed by his hatred for Dave Meltzer. Meltzer just lives rent-free in this man's head. I mean, he never shuts up about him. Even when he has valid criticism and Meltzer is caught in either a lie or something that's not accurate, and he points it out, like, that's fine, but he never shuts up about this guy. Evidently, there was a random Twitter account with 22 followers that hadn't tweeted anything in about 3 years. And they posted a tweet claiming that Brandon Thurston of WrestleNomics had reported, which he did not, that Dave Meltzer owns a 3% stake in AEW. And Thurston has since come out and said that it's bullshit and it's completely absurd. So this random account made up a fake quote from Brandon that Bischoff then amplified on his social media and reacted to it as if it were true. And Thurston quickly shot it down. He said he never said anything of that sort. And that would be embarrassing enough for Eazy-E that he either got duped from a Twitter troll or he knew that he was spreading misinformation but did it anyway just to shit on Meltzer, which, I mean, let's be honest. I mean, Dave has had a rough year. And of all the things that you could shit on Meltzer for, I don't think you have to make stuff up. And then when Eric got called out on it, instead of apologizing or moving on, he doubled down. Now he's saying that, oh, well, Thurston is just covering his ass because if he came into proprietary information or confidential information that he wasn't supposed to know about and he wasn't supposed to divulge publicly, then he could be sued or he could even be looking at criminal penalties. So he has decided to go the conspiracy route. This AEW deal is making some heads explode this week. Bischoff is apparently one of them. Sharing out a fake tweet like that is a surefire sign that there isn't much in his head to begin with. I wasn't home to go live after Dynamite on Wednesday, but I did catch up with the show later. There were back-to-back injuries during the Ring of Honor taping before the show, a bad start to the night. Independent wrestler Kelly Maiden was knocked out in her match with Lady Frost in the last spot of the match. Maiden got hit with a spinning move of some kind, and Lady Frost's legs landed on her head. And she was described as obviously being knocked out and did not move, at which point AEW's medical team got into the ring to check on her, and she was taken from the ring on a backboard after they loosened the ropes to get her out of there. So that sounds like a possible concussion, and hopefully she is okay. Then, Sammy Guevara got knocked out in his match with Serpentico. According to fans in attendance, Serpentico came off the rope with the idea that Sammy would catch him in a cutter, but the timing was off, and Serpentico landed with Sammy's face underneath him, and Guevara was immediately knocked unconscious. And Bryce Remsburg called a stop to the match right then and there. Serpentico was ruled the winner. The medical team got into the ring again to check on Sammy, and he was eventually stretchered from the ring. Sammy just came back, too, not that long ago, I think, from I thought he had a bad concussion at one point. So that makes it extra scary. But Wade Keller of The Torch says that when he got backstage, he was up and walking around. So, I mean, that's a good sign. And good on AEW in both cases for enacting their concussion protocol, as they should in these situations, even if it turns out they're overreacting and they're totally fine. You know, there's a protocol for this sort of thing, which ironically is the opposite of what Sammy did in his match with Jeff Hardy earlier this year, which is why he was suspended. So that was a rough start to the night. And what followed was their five-year anniversary episode of Dynamite with Will Ospreay against Ricochet for the International Championship. They had the kind of crazy match that you would expect. Maybe not even as crazy as I was expecting it to be. But they had the kind of match that you would expect. I said on TNT last week, the best finish to do might be to have the Callis family interfere and turn against Ospreay, which leads to Ospreay and Ricochet forming an alliance to battle Callis's family. And then eventually they can circle back to Ospreay against Ricochet on a pay-per-view next year, right? Maybe at their stadium show in Australia in February. That's kind of what they did here, but not exactly. First, they did a double pin finish where Ospreay fell on top of Ricochet after a desperation hidden blade, and Rick Knox counted both of their shoulders to the mat. He declared the match a draw, which the fans hated. Both men wanted the match restarted. They said Tony Khan made it official, and so the match would continue. But then Konosuke Takeshita ran in, and he attacked Ospreay for the disqualification. And he ended up killing them both, and he was the last man standing. This came after Ospreay was shown talking to Kyle Fletcher in the back before the match when Don Callis and Takeshita walked up. And Callis said that he and Fletcher actually had a flight to go catch, and they gotta get out of there. Even though the show was just starting. Like, that will never not be funny to me. They did the same thing a few weeks ago with Wheeler Yuta. They were trying to interview him about what happened to Bryan Danielson at All Out. And they showed he was like wheeling his, Wheeler was wheeling his luggage out of the building. And it was like 20 minutes into the show. Like, where the fuck are you going? The show just started. Evidently, Dynamite is not important enough to Tony Khan's own talent, so they just leave early when they don't see their name written on the board in the back. But Takeshita stayed behind, and so it makes you wonder if he acted on his own, because they've already established that Takeshita does not like Will Ospreay. He doesn't like him, he's always giving him a dirty look. Or did he attack Ospreay on behalf of Don Callis, or on the order of Don Callis? So now they've announced a triple threat match for WrestleDream, with Ospreay defending the international title against Ricochet and Takeshita. Even though they were teasing a match with Takeshita and Okada, all of a sudden now he's not challenging for the continental title, he's challenging for the international title. I'm hoping that that is a sign that Tony Khan has decided to hold off on things until the Continental Classic returns. And we're going to get Okada against Takeshita in the finals this year at World's End. Because if not, then none of this makes any sense. Why he would pivot away from that does not make sense unless they're going to run it as the final in the tournament later this year. They did a TV time with Chris Jericho segment. Hi, guys. To set up a Ring of Honor world title match between Jericho and Mark Briscoe at WrestleDream. Since Jericho pinned Briscoe in their trios match at Grand Slam. Jericho went for the cheap heat by saying Mark's brother Jay could probably beat him, but he doesn't think that Mark can beat him. And that everybody knows Mark will never be as good as his brother Jay was. We've already seen Jericho as the Ring of Honor World Champion. I have even less interest now seeing him challenge for the Ring of Honor World title. Yeah, Jericho was a very important part of the launch of Dynamite. In 2019, since we're talking about the five-year anniversary this past week, he was a very important part of the launch and the early days of AEW. And I even said it then, he was the right choice to hold the AEW world title when they first started out, when they were first getting off the ground. It would have been too soon to put the belt on Hangman Page. Now, 5 years later, it's just sad to watch Jericho on these shows. He actively drags the show down on most weeks when he's out there. On the flip side, they aired a Darby Allin taped promo sitting on the hood of a car in a lot somewhere. And I really like this. When he was 19 years old, he said he used to ride the bus and daydream. But one night, he got hit in the head with something and guys were laughing at him. And then he turned around and he realized that those guys were taking turns spitting on him. And after doing nothing, he finally went to go do something when one of the guys pulled a switchblade on him. Asking, what are you going to do about it? And Darby said, well, it looks like I'm going to get stabbed tonight. And he starts fighting. He said the fight got broken up quickly, but it felt so good to stand up for himself. Last week against Jon Moxley, you live by the sword, you die by the sword. He said he put everything on the line against Moxley because he was fixated on proving him wrong. WrestleDream was supposed to be him against Bryan Danielson, but it was not meant to be. Actually, Grand Slam was supposed to be him against Bryan Danielson, not WrestleDream. Bryan did say the next time he loses, he's done. So had Darby beaten him, there would have been no WrestleDream for Bryan Danielson. But Darby said that people say he's the future of this company, but he's losing faith in himself. He'll be at the Tacoma Dome. He's going to issue an open challenge. Anybody who wants to build their name off of him, bring it, because he's got nothing left to lose. I really like this promo. I really like this promo, and I like that they tried to explain why it was so important to him that he put that guaranteed title shot that he had on the line of Grand Slam. It's still, you can look at it and go, man, what an idiot. But I thought that the way they did this promo, they did a good job. He did a good job of explaining why. Hangman Page got a win over Juice Robinson. Jay White made his return after the match and attacked Hangman. It's great to see Switchblade back. He had a foot injury. It's been gone for a while. Now, seemingly, he's back as a babyface. And I hope he's back for more of a singles run than just going after the trios titles. They gave Britt Baker a win in her hometown. They were in Pittsburgh. This was her first match since losing to Mercedes Moné at All In. And only her fourth match all year. So you could tell there's still a little bit of rust there that she's got to work off. They showed Mariah May in the front row watching. So Britt comes back and has one match. And already they're teasing a women's world title match for Britt Baker, who I would point out lost to the TBS champion. But then later in the show, Mariah said that Willow Nightingale is failing up. She loses and loses and loses, but she's getting a title shot soon, or wants a title shot. And that brought in Willow, and the two of them had to be separated. And don't forget, there is still the inevitable turn on Mina Shirakawa that has to happen. And then we can get Mariah defending against Mina. They showed highlights of Private Party beating the Young Bucks on the second episode of Dynamite back in 2019, only to then cut back live here and have Private Party wrestling the Iron Savages, which, I mean, boy, what a difference 5 years can make. At least they won quickly, and Isaiah Cassidy called out the Young Bucks, who came out. They teased giving them a tag team title match right then and there, right here on the five-year anniversary show. Matt Jackson said that, due to our limited dates, though, we're not going to waste one here in Pittsburgh. I did like that. I did like the limited dates line. Jack Perry attacked Private Party from behind, which brings out Katsuyori Shibata, because why not, I guess? So Christopher Daniels ends up making a six-man tag team match for Rampage, and Shibata is now going to challenge Jack Perry for the TNT title at WrestleDream. Renee was in the back with MVP, who was there to make an announcement when Prince Nana walked up to him and reminded him that he used to wrestle and he could lace up his boots anytime. You know, if you want to see something weird, go look up Prince Nana against Crash Holly on WWF Metal from back in the day. He looks unrecognizable. He was bigger. He was definitely bigger than he is today. MVP said, well, that sounds like a problem for their complaint department. And then standing behind Prince Nana, they pan back, and standing there in a suit is Shelton Benjamin. MVP says that's his complaint department. The Shelton reveal got a big pop from the live crowd. Prince Nana did not look like he wanted to wrestle after that. So there it is, you know, one down, one to go. Now we're just waiting on the arrival of Bobby Lashley. The Hurt Syndicate is nearly complete. And in the main event, it was Bryan Danielson against Kazuchika Okada, title for title, in a match that was only made on social media 48 hours earlier. This was the rubber match in their rivalry, and it got no promotion whatsoever on television. They never mentioned it on Dynamite last week. They never mentioned it on Collision over the weekend. It was just announced. So let's take a look at this here. First, Bryan Danielson is suffocated with a plastic bag by John Moxley and the Blackpool Combat Club. Right? Left for dead. Then they announce that he's going to be unable to defend his championship at Grand Slam against Darby Allin. But Tony Khan approves of a match for Grand Slam anyway between Bryan Danielson, of course, should he be cleared, and Nigel McGuinness, which he never once talked about or even bothered to show up on television for to promote in the lead up to Grand Slam. It was all on Nigel to cut those promos. We never heard a fucking word from Bryan Danielson. A match 15 years in the making. And then 2 days before this big anniversary show, Bryan Danielson just goes on social media and he challenges Okada to a match for reasons. So in the span of 2 weeks, they just blew through two big Bryan Danielson matches, which means, by the way, he's losing at WrestleDream. Because what other explanation is there for why they're blowing through these matches so quickly? other than Tony Khan just books for the sake of booking, which is also entirely possible. Actually, it's not possible. I mean, that's what he does a lot of the time. But Brian keeps saying, you know, that next time he loses, he's done. That's it. He's retired. So him losing next weekend is the only way to really try to make sense of the man's booking over the past 4 weeks and how manic it's been. So both the AEW World title and the Continental title were on the line in this match, but the Continental title was only on the line for the first 20 minutes. And they got TBS to give them a big overrun, so they got plenty of time. The match ended up going 30 minutes, and it was a very good match until the finish. It was a very good match. And it was worked very much like an old Okada New Japan match for the first 20 minutes, where they were still in first gear. And story-wise, it actually made sense because Okada was trying to run out the clock, right? Just run out the clock long enough to where my title is not on the line anymore, only your title is on the line. And Danielson caught him with a running knee. Okada rolled out to the floor at the 20-minute mark, and he saved his title. I think at that point, people figured out what the finish was going to be, now that Okada's title was safe. Pac and Claudio for the finish. They showed up at ringside. They didn't get in the ring, but they just showed up. They were just watching. And the announcers explained that this would not be allowed under Continental rules. But since the Continental title was no longer on the line, that it was okay. Whatever. I mean, if it all sounds ridiculous listening to me say it out loud, it's because it is. So their presence distracted Okada, who tried for another Rainmaker after hitting multiple ones before this. But this time, Danielson countered into a backslide and he pinned him. And that is Okada's first pinfall loss since signing with AEW. And it comes off of a distraction on a backslide. Amazing. He gives Brian a Rainmaker after he flips off Pac, he flips off Claudio, he storms off to the back. Claudio and Pac, they hit the ring, they pick Brian up, out comes John Moxley, who says none of this is about himself. None of this is what he wanted. He is fighting for something much bigger than himself. If any of this was about him, he'd have put Brian out of his misery years ago. Excalibur said that somebody was forcing Moxley's hand in this. Gee, I wonder who that could be. Maybe it's the best in the world. Wheeler Yuta then runs down with a hammer to make the save. It's hammer time. Brian and Wheeler, they clear the ring. Yuta challenges Claudio and Pac to a tag team match next week with Brian as his tag team partner, which means that up until Collision last night, the only thing announced for what they are calling Title Tuesday was a match with no titles on the line. Even now, as I sit here, there is one title match that is announced for Title Tuesday. Everything else that has been announced so far for Title Tuesday is not for a championship. Now, this Yuta thing, him putting the challenge out there, me and Brian are going to take on you two guys. This smells like a four horsemen beatdown if I've ever seen one. I thought it was going to happen here with Yuta, you know, bashing Brian in the head with the hammer. But, I mean, a plastic bag over his head kept him off television for 3 weeks. So, I mean, if he'd have hit this guy in the head with a hammer, then he would have been gone for months. But I think Yuta is turning on Brian this Tuesday. I think it's going to be the horseman angle. They also did not announce a single match on Dynamite for Collision, for last night's Collision. And they usually announce something. So it was very strange. They announced absolutely nothing. Heading into the show last night, up until I think on social media yesterday, they finally announced stuff. You know, for a 5-year anniversary show, even with the two big matches, which were both very good, it still felt underwhelming. Not a bad show, but again, for a show they were promoting as this big deal, it didn't really come across that way. That's kind of how WrestleDream is feeling to me right now. It's not going to be a bad show by any means. AEW, if they know how to do one thing, it comes to the quality of their pay-per-views. They know how to do pay-per-view the right way. But the international title match right now, as I look at this card, is the only one that I look at where I'm like, okay, this match here I have to see. But let's run down this card so far, since it is coming up next Saturday, and I will give my predictions. We have Brian Cage against Atlantis Jr. on the pre-show for the Ring of Honor television title. You lost me at Ring of Honor television title. I presume that Atlantis is going to retain here. We might possibly get Hangman Page against Jay White. That is not official. It could very well happen on TV. If it gets made, though, I'm going with Hangman, even though Jay White just came back. I feel like after beating Swerve, the eventual direction for Hangman should be the AEW world title. And I don't think he should lose until he wins the world title. So I'm going with Hangman. Mercedes Moné. She might be defending her TBS championship on this show against Chris Statlander. Again, that is not official, but that is the direction. But if it does, I'm picking Mercedes to retain. You know, Chris Statlander, by the way, is now a babyface. Did you know that? I mean, you know that after Collision last night, but she is now a babyface. She no longer has Stokely Hathaway with her. And no, there was no angle done on TV to explain any of this. She had that great match with Willow Nightingale at All Out that she won. There was no angle coming out of it to explain the change and why she would have dropped Stokely. Tony Khan just did it. After turning on her best friend, she turned on Willow Nightingale, who is like the most beloved woman in the entire company, one of the most beloved baby faces in the entire company. And now she's just the baby face out of nowhere. And we're supposed to root for her because Mercedes is the heel or something. That's about as deep as this goes. And yet there are people who think that there's nothing wrong with the way that Tony Khan books. Everything is just hunky-dory. Speaking of out of nowhere, they announced that Emi Sakura is back from Japan. She's going to be challenging Mercedes on Tuesday. It is the lone title match so far that has been announced for this show. And she's going to be challenging Mercedes for both her TBS title and her New Japan Strong Women's Championship. Why? Because the video package last night said that she's in her 30th year in the business and Emi wants to finally win a title in AEW. So Tony Khan is giving her a double title match. The strong title I could see. What she has done to earn a shot at the TBS title, that was never explained. Darby Allin issued that open challenge, right? He got attacked last night by Brody King on Collision. So it's going to be Darby Allin against Brody King. And Darby thinks it's because he's never pinned Brody King before. Not in AEW, not on the indies, not anywhere. And Brody owes his AEW career, in Darby's words, he owes his career to Darby. Everything he has in AEW is because of Darby. Darby was the one who told Tony Khan to hire him in the first place. So that is the story that they are telling going into this. There's the history between them, and Darby is looking to finally get a win over this guy. They need a reset with Darby coming off his loss to Jon Moxley, so Brody King gives him a mountain to climb, which is far safer than the actual mountain that he plans to climb next year. Mark Briscoe defends the Ring of Honor World Championship against the Learning Tree, Chris Jericho. Jericho does not need to win the ROH title again. Big Bill, he needs to break away from him. So I'm going to go with Briscoe to retain with maybe a Big Bill assist backfiring to cost Jericho the match. So at least we get some story advancement out of this. Mariah May is going to defend her Women's World Championship against the winner of the match between Britt Baker and Willow Nightingale on Dynamite this Tuesday. I'm guessing it's going to be Willow, and they don't go with Britt as a challenger this quickly. But whoever it is, Mariah is not losing this match. Private Party, they beat the House of Black and Top Flight on Collision last night to earn the right to challenge the Young Bucks here for the tag team titles. I would like to see Private Party get a run with the belts. They never have. In 5 years with AEW, they never have. But to go from being destroyed by the Blackpool Combat Club and made to look like scrubs, basically, to then beating the Young Bucks to win the titles, I mean, that's just, it's too big of a leap for me to believe that they would actually do it. So the Young Bucks retain. Jack Perry defends the TNT Championship against Katsuyori Shibata. I mean, I like Shibata and everything, but again, this is just one of those matches for the sake of doing matches. And Jack Perry is not losing. Will Ospreay defends the international title in a three-way match against Ricochet and Konosuke Takeshita. I am all for a Takeshita win here, but I like the idea of him beating Okada in the finals of the Continental Classic more. And I just don't see him winning here and then winning that too. So my heart says Takeshita, but my head says Ospreay retains. So I'm going to say Will Ospreay remains the international champion. And Bryan Danielson puts the AEW World Championship and his career, as he is doing in every match, on the line against Jon Moxley. This feels like a title change to me. Again, I think the reason that we're getting these Bryan Danielson matches so rushed is because he's done. Again, as a full-time performer, he's done. And they're going to wrap it up with him in his home state of Washington here at WrestleDream. Jon Moxley is the one who is leading the charge with whatever this new angle that they're doing is with him and the BCC. It's like he's fighting for the greater good, right? There's like a greater power. Remember when Vince McMahon was the greater power? It's me. It was me all along, Austin. I think that there's another McMahon here who is a greater power, and perhaps the reveal will come next weekend. I don't see Jon Moxley losing this match. I think Jon Moxley is going to be your new AEW World Champion, and for him, what would that be? Is that three? Four? It's at least three. He's had that title a few times. So that's the card for WrestleDream. Again, it will change a little bit more during the week. I think it's pretty full as it is, but again, some of the matches I mentioned are not official for the card. They may not end up on this card, but that is the card, and it is next Saturday night. So there will be no Collision next week. If you're a big Collision fan, you'll be very disappointed to find out that there will be no Collision next Saturday because of WrestleDream. And one last AEW note here, and this is kind of scary. Luchasaurus, or Killswitch, whatever you want to call him, the reason we have not seen him in several weeks is he is recovering after his fiance found him collapsed at home back on September 27th. He was rushed to the hospital where they found that his blood oxygen was below 80%. That is dangerously low. We're talking life and death. I didn't know much about blood oxygen until COVID hit. And, people were buying those little finger monitors and everything, and people were checking their blood oxygen to make sure it didn't drop below a certain level. I know 80% sounds high, but you drop below 80%, that's not good. And they determined that he had pneumonia in both of his lungs, and it was discovered that he was only days away from permanent lung damage, and he had no idea. So he's been on oxygen in the days that have followed. I don't know if he's still on oxygen, but he was. And there is no date at the moment for his in-ring return. Fightful says they got permission from those close to Killswitch before running their story. So wishing him all the best. That's very scary. And hopefully he is on the mend and he will be back very soon. Yeah, I forgot to mention one thing about WrestleDream. We still have Christian Cage is out there with that contract to cash in for a world championship match. I don't know how he might Factor. Yeah, how he might factor into that. What kind of fucking accent is that? I don't know how he may factor. There we go. How did I say factor? Where'd that come from? What's going on here? It's my birthday. I haven't even had a drink yet. I have no excuse. Yeah, I don't know how he's going to factor into that match, if at all. Maybe he won't. I still think Moxley wins the title, but I forgot to mention that Christian is still lurking. Anyway, if you have questions for the mailbag, we're not going to do one this week. I didn't have any time to put one together here with everything going on, but we will get back to it next week. Keep sending in those questions, thesolemonster@gmail.com. I'm also due. You know what I should try to find time to do this week? We've had so many new channel members added on YouTube and gifted memberships from David and Fire Panda and everybody who's been gifting memberships. We've had like 300 new members added just from that alone in the last several days. I will try to do a members-only Q&A. And I'll try to set up a separate thread for that if I do in the community tab. So you'll see it there if I do it. But maybe I'll borrow even from the mailbag here. Maybe I'll borrow some questions. So email me, thesolemonster@gmail.com. Follow me on X, @solemonster. And of course, subscribe to the YouTube channel, Solo Monster Sounds Off. We are closing in very rapidly on 82,000 subscribers very soon. My full Bad Blood review, as well as the NXT review and all the weekly reviews, are up on the channel. So if you missed any of it, you can go check them out there. All the video versions are up for you. I will be back with you next weekend. It's going to be Wrestle Dream Weekend. There will be a brand new podcast next Sunday. That'll be episode 883. And I expect to see you all there. So thank you again for the birthday wishes, those of you who have sent them in. It means a lot to me. And I will be back with you next Sunday. So until then, be well, stay safe, enjoy the rest of your week. And we'll do it all over again for 883. Until then, take care, guys.
The Solo Monster sounds off.
Grimace always freaked me out. Like, I don't know what he's supposed to be. Like, the Hamburglar, he burglarizes hamburgers. Like, he steals hamburgers. He's a thief. I get that. Like, that's understandable. But, like, what is Grimace supposed to be? Is he supposed to be some sort of, like an eggplant? Or what is he supposed to be? These are the kinds of questions that I ponder here at 1:30 in the morning. He's like a weird, fucked up Barney.
The Solo Monster sounds off.
Since 2007.
Bringing you the good,
the bad,
and the ugly. Check out the weekly live streams, bonus content for subscribers, and follow The Solo Monster on Facebook, Instagram, and X. The Solo Monster.
I love you, Solo.